There is no name given to the woman of Samaria, but those who have read the invisible records say in one place that her name is Phonita, which in Greek means light. Yet in still other places they say her name is Nalda, N-A-L-D-A, and there's no particular meaning to Nalda. Whatever her name was, she lived among a group of people who were excommunicated from Judaism. They were an outcast sect, and for many centuries there had been intense bitterness between them and Judaism. They themselves did not accept the Judaism of Judea. They rather accepted the teaching of Jacob and Moses, not of the prophets. And they knew nothing whatsoever of a man called Jesus Christ. Their history had been one of intermingling, of being captured and returned, accepting stragglers in their midst, and so now they were considered tainted, not of pure Judaic blood. In fact, they were referred to as half Jew and half Gentile, so much so that it was forbidden, according to Judaic law, for any Jew to mingle with a Samaritan. To eat food with them was actually illegal. And so when you left Judea to go somewhere that might lead through Samaria, you found another route, even if it was a longer one. Anything not to walk in that country where those who lived were considered to be contamination. And this woman now, for some reason she could perhaps not understand, decided to go out and get some water. And there were many springs around near her home, but she didn't know exactly why. She didn't want the spring water that day. There was a well, and she was drawn to it irresistibly. Even though it was a distance away and the heat was oppressive, she walked toward that well. And as she arrived there, there was a man sitting on the well. His clothes, his demeanor told her he was a Jew. And the four words he said to her, I want you to remember forever. They will help you in more ways than you can possibly imagine at this very moment. He said four words to that woman, and she was startled by them. Give me to drink, he said. You, a Jew, asking me to give you to drink? Why, our nations don't even talk to each other. Who ever heard of a Jew talking to a woman in public? Little did she know he was a rabbi. Now, did he want water? Later, he refused meat from his own disciples. Incidentally, she never did give him that water that he asked for. So, of course, that was just an opening gambit for a conversation. But what did he mean, give me to drink? And who stood there, sitting on the well? If we look at this historical encounter, as human beings would, there's a man there and there's a woman there, and they speak to each other. He says this, she says that, and this is what he means and this is what she means, and then we go home and say we understand, but we don't understand that way. And we're not going to look at it from the viewpoint of seeing two people talking to each other. The reason we won't do that today is this. We have come a long way in our own pilgrimage to truth. And we have reached the conclusion that we understand the truth that God did not create matter. Now then, if God did not create matter, if God did not create mortality, what was standing at the well? Two material beings? Are we going to just say, these are two material beings talking, and one is the Son of God and one is a woman outcast? Or must we be willing to accept the allness of spirit and therefore say, if spirit is all that can be standing at the well is spirit? And so now we look at this scene in a different way. We'll see that spirit is there, but we are looking at two not material forms, but two images. And they're not the same kind of images. One image is the Christ image, the divine image. The other is the woman, the mortal image. And now we have the divine image and likeness, the soul form made visible, and the third dimensional form, what we have called the material form or the material image. Now, if you've ever been in a movie house where the director uses what is called a split screen, there's somebody in, let's say, Chicago. And on half the screen, they show a photograph of that man in a telephone booth. He's calling someone. And then on the other half, they show a picture of the girlfriend he's calling, let's say in Atlanta. And so there's the split screen, the man in the telephone booth in Chicago, and adjacent to it, the girl in the telephone in Atlanta. And they're both right next to each other on the screen, although they're thousands of miles apart. Now, I think the Father can do that too. And I'd like you to see that there are two images, one from the fourth dimension, the Christ image, and a second image, the woman, from the third dimension. And they're put next to each other. Whenever you see the Christ, this is what's happening. The fourth dimension is becoming visible in the third. They're actually in two different worlds, appearing in the same world. One source is mortal mind, one source is infinite mind. And now a strange thing happens. As they're placed next to each other, we see that the purpose is for the fourth dimensional consciousness to show us the deficiencies in the third dimensional consciousness. Spirit is speaking through the fourth dimensional image, which is juxtaposed to the third dimensional image. And every time the third dimensional image, called the woman, says this or that, the fourth dimensional image makes the correction, as if soul was standing behind mind, to show us the difference between the finite concepts of mind as against the infinite reality of spirit. Always, whether Christ is standing with Nicodemus, or cleansing the temple, or healing someone, this is the purpose. The fourth dimensional consciousness is revealing, through its divine image and likeness, its instrument, here called Jesus, the truth, which is unknown to the third dimensional form, in this case, the woman. And so now let's look at this, not as man and woman talking at a well, but as mortal mind expressing as the appearance called woman, and infinite consciousness expressing as the appearance called Jesus. The conversation is not between man and woman, but between the divine and the mortal. Forgetting the forms, seeing only infinite spirit as the reality that is there, teaching those who have not yet attained the consciousness of that infinite spirit. The infinite spirit says, "Give me to drink." You know God isn't thirsty. Later, on the cross, he is going to say, "I thirst." We will make the mistake then of thinking, "Oh, he was thirsty." But he wasn't then, any more than he was when he said to the woman at the well, "Give me to drink." This is the infinite spirit speaking, "Give me to drink." And the reason I have asked you to remember these words and to make them a living consciousness in you is this. The Christ only asks you to give what already has been bestowed to you, to call attention to what you possess. How can you give drink to the Christ? How? By turning to the Christ within you, which is thirsty for your recognition. "I thirst," he said on the cross, meaning the world has not recognized the Christ in each individual. And so we parch the Christ within ourselves by not turning to it. When you drink of the Christ, when you recognize the Christ, you are giving drink to the Christ. When you recognize the Christ in your neighbor, you are giving drink to the Christ. And he's saying to the woman, "Give me to drink." Recognize the identity of Christ where you are. In you, Christ says, "I thirst." If you turn away, then you are not turning to the Spirit of Christ within yourself, which is the living water. And when you turn to that Spirit within yourself, then the living water flows, the Christ in you pours forth, and you are able to return to the Father that which has been bestowed upon you before the foundations of the world. And there is the secret of all life. Because unless the living word of the Father is flowing in you, unless the word is your day, your thought, your action, your guide, you cannot go to the Christ which thirsts for you to return to it, its love, its wisdom, its truth. In you is all that the Father hath. And when you go to the Christ within to find it, you slake the thirst of the Christ. It can then flow forth, expressing the Father in you. On the cross, "I thirst" is the expression that the world is blind to the inner Christ. Think for a moment of every possible problem that could occur in our lives and trace it right back to this, and you'll see how it works. Out there is the problem. Why? "Give me to drink." And you'll see why. Find Christ within you. Christ within you finds Christ within your neighbor, your loved one. And there is no longer the thirst. "The Last Supper, drink of my blood." Ah. In one case, Christ says, "Drink of my blood." In another, Christ says, "Give me to drink." They're one and the same, aren't they? The invitation to turn to the living water of Christ within you is giving Christ to drink. And then Christ returns what you give. You give recognition, and Christ flows. What do? Nothing more. You give the recognition. Christ does the work. Christ flows. Wisely, John puts this scene after the cleansing of the temple and the rebirth of spirit to Nicodemus, to be reborn of the spirit. How can you be reborn of the spirit, says Nicodemus? And we must face that too. One, flesh is flesh and cannot be born of the spirit. Only that which has descended from above can ascend. And yet you must be reborn of the spirit, but you cannot be if you are flesh. And therefore, we are told that you must believe on the Son of Man or perish. You must know that you are the spirit or perish. And therefore, you cannot be the flesh and find or see the kingdom of God. You must be the spirit. You must be that one which has descended from heaven. You must be the Son of Man. You must accept the identity of Christ within every individual. Now, the great secret of give me to drink is not understanding those words, but making them part of your active life. Now, if someone were drowning and you had the capacity to throw them a lifesaver, you would. If someone were falling off a cliff and you could haul them back, you would. Christ in everyone is saying to you, give me to drink. Are you going to do it? That's the meaning of give me to drink. This is not just a woman at a well. This is the human race. Significantly, he is not speaking to a high priest or a ruler or a disciple. He is speaking to a woman. And to a woman, he is saying, give me to drink. To a woman, he will say something even more important in a moment. It will be the first disclosure of his identity on this earth to a woman. I am he that you speak of. That's the first place he says who he is. I understand Messiah is coming, who will teach us all things. I am he that you speak of. Why to a woman? Why not to his disciples? That's also part of the scene at the well. Christ in the world is thirsty. In each individual you meet, that thirst is unknown. By the very person who stands before you. But Christ in the midst of that person is saying to you, recognize me, and that is giving me to drink. Now, as a person falling off a cliff or drowning would merit your immediate help, you would then throw them a physical thing, a lifesaver, a rope, something to pull them back. Now, here's a great, great secret. You do this with everyone you meet, invisibly. And it changes your relationship with that individual almost instantly. If there's a person who walks into your vision, and you do not throw that rope across of Christ recognition, you're in a state of separation. If a person walks into your immediate vicinity, into your living room, into your office, walks up to you on the street, if you will throw that rope across and recognize Christ within that individual saying, give me to drink, and then realize that Christ is there. Christ is where you are. Christ is in between. One inseparable Christ is in that individual there and here. You'll have established the purpose, the fulfillment of the purpose, which is now given in us in these words, give me to drink. You will be establishing your own network of Christ. You will be establishing the active omnipresence, not just omnipresence in the mind, but omnipresence in the deed. It says here Jesus was weary. He wearied, and so he sat on the well. Was Christ weary? Always, when you find Christ is weary, you must read that to mean that spirit wearies of man's ignorance. That spirit becomes weary as man turns away from the truth. There are some passages that clearly show you that, just so you know that you've got to read this Bible a little differently than the normal human mind does. Here's Isaiah on this weariness. It's 43:24. I weary, said Jesus. And in Isaiah we see that God is speaking through Isaiah about Jacob and says, I weary of your iniquities. The exact words are, thou hast made me to serve with thy sins, thou hast wearied me with thine iniquities, O Jacob. Now you see the wearying. You wouldn't say that God was weary, so he sat down on the well. It's the same with the Christ. It wasn't the Christ that is weary sitting on a well. Weariness here is a symbolism of man turning away. Just like it says when Jesus comes to a city or goes from a city. The Christ doesn't come or go to a city. When Christ comes to a city, that means the city is turning to the understanding of Christ. When Christ goes from a city, that means the city is turning away from Christ. You've always got to read with this in mind. The comings and the goings are not of the Christ, but of people to and from Christ. Same with the drinking, give me to drink. The same with the wearying. Always you've got to stand back and read this from the soul level. Now Malachi again. In the second chapter of Malachi, that's the last prophet in your Old Testament. He explains weariness to some extent. Ye have wearied the Lord with your words. Wherein have we wearied him? When we say every one that doeth evil is good in the sight of the Lord, and he delighteth in them, or where is the God of judgment? Words which still believe that evil might be made by God in some way, or that God will judge the evildoer. And this is the wearying of God. Turning away from the truth of omnipresent perfection. So much for the understanding of Jesus was wearied. Now, he had chosen this route through Samaria. In his youth, he had been through it many times. He had even taken his brother through it, unknown to his parents. But why did he go through this outcast land? To whom was it outcast? Is there a place that is not God's country? Do you see, this is not Jesus the man, but the Spirit itself, using the appearing form as its instrument, and the Spirit, to it, everywhere is its country, the earth is the Lord's. It is exposing man-made myths about a good country or a bad country, or a good people or a bad people. And so when she was startled, and later when the disciples were startled that he, a rabbi, was talking publicly to a woman, and an outcast woman as well, a woman of questionable character, the Spirit itself knew no woman of questionable character. The Spirit only knew itself. The Spirit was giving the Christ to drink. And in saying to the woman, "Give me to drink," that was the recognition that she had the capacity to find Christ within herself. That was the recognition of our own Christ identity. And here the world was seeing an outcast woman. Not the Spirit. And the Spirit was teaching the world, there is no such thing as an outcast man or woman. There is no such thing as an outcast race or nation. And Spirit, appearing as Jesus, was walking across all of the conditioning of the human mind, which said, take another route. Don't go through that contaminated territory. It wasn't contaminated. It was God's country, seen through the eyes of Spirit. And it was giving Christ to drink. The recognition that Christ is everywhere. Later he was to say, my own have not received me. But you find that he was received by, not his own, the Samaritans, the half-Jew and the half-Gentile. And then another paradox. He says, salvation is with the Jews. Even though he has said, mine own have not received me. And again, you've got to come closely to see what he's talking about. That first the intellect, and then the Spirit. Not a question of people, races, or colors, but a question of spiritual evolution. The Jew represented at that moment the material concept, and then the Samaritan was the halfway point, so that from Judea through Samaria, finally to Galilee. The three levels of consciousness. And so it says here, it was the sixth hour. Now that could mean 6 o'clock. It could also mean, as it did in the revelation of St. John later, that 666, the sixth hour. It was going to be the dawn of a regeneration. The approach to the completion of the seventh day. There are many fascinating revelations right here at the well. Now, you may have been taught that the well represents the intellect through Jacob, because this is called Jacob's well. Well, it could have meant that at one level of our consciousness, but now let's look at it as infinite consciousness. there's the Christ sitting on the well. And so between the woman and the water in the well is the Christ. And the symbolism is that the living water must come through Christ, not through the human mind. That Christ and only Christ is the way to the living water. And that when you go to the well of your consciousness, you must go through Christ. You must give Christ to drink. Meaning, you must go within yourself to the living Word of the Father in you. That recognition that it is there is giving Christ to drink, and then it gives you its living fountain of truth. That's the symbolism right there at the well of Jesus Christ sitting on the well. Now he's completely unconcerned about her startled attitude that he's there, that he's speaking to an outcast woman. He's totally unconcerned with the surface elements of human life. Why? Because spirit is unconditioned. It has no judgments, no recriminations. It's not seeing one different from another. But isn't he setting the example for us? Doesn't spirit say, follow me? Isn't spirit saying that you've got to walk through the appearance right directly to the Christ that is there, in spite of all human attitudes that may have told you this is forbidden, that you, living in spirit, do not go by man-made laws which say this or that is forbidden. Your vision is Christ's vision. So far, she has no idea who he is. But he is the invisible spirit which has come through a man named Jesus, who has been able to let himself be the instrument of spirit. And this spirit is teaching men how not to die, and they're rejecting it. It is teaching us how to be emancipated from mortality and all of its conditions. And the disciples were not ready yet to understand, but this woman was. Perhaps the reason she was becomes more clear when we see that she's had rather a difficult life, a life which in a way has prepared her, so that now he's not speaking to intellect anymore, he's speaking to the heart. He's speaking to the emotional level, he's speaking to the female principle. He has left the intellect in Judea, he's now speaking to the heart in Samaria. Now, Jacob's well is replete with many fascinating ideas. Let's look at Genesis, because I think we can begin to understand this if we will see the history of Jacob's well. You remember that Jacob bought this land for 100 pieces of money. And that is where he fed his cattle. And when he died, before he died, this land was deeded over to his son Joseph. Joseph's bones were buried there. Now, that sounds like just history, but it's more than that. It's a prophecy. Genesis 33, 18 and 19. Jacob came to Shalem, the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. And when he came from Padan-Aram and pitched his tents before the city, he bought a parcel of a field which he had spread, where he spread his tent. And then he entered there, he erected there an altar and called it Elohe Israel. Now this parcel of ground later became the property of Joseph. You see, as he transfers the land, it's picked up later in the book of Joshua, in the 24th chapter. As he transfers the land to Joseph, that natural mind, transferring the land to Joseph, the Christ mind, because Joseph is a Christ figure. And that means a higher progression. Now the burial in Joshua of Joseph's bones on this land is a symbol of resurrection. And on this land, very close nearby, when Jesus appears there on the well, what you are seeing is a statement that Joseph reincarnates as Jesus Christ. Do you see that? Joseph reincarnates as Jesus Christ. And the importance of that follows when she demands of him in a moment, "Are you more important than Jacob, who built this well?" Little does she know, this is the son of Jacob reincarnate. This is his very land. This is the Spirit of God that she is talking to and saying, "Are you more important than Jacob?" Those of you who have read Casey know that he stated that Joseph had reincarnated as Jesus Christ. Joshua too, for that matter. That was the line. But this is the authenticity of it. Casey got it just from cosmic consciousness. The Bible gives it to you if you're reading from the soul. Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, "Give me to drink. Give me to drink." For his disciples were gone away unto the city to buy meat. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, "How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans." Jesus answered and said unto her, "If thou knowest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, 'Give me to drink,' thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water." Now, we're going to hear about living water all through this New Testament. We know the gift of God is eternal life. If she had known that the Word of God brings forth the activity of eternal life, she would have said to the Spirit that stood before her, "Give me water." Not me, you, but you give me. But give me living water. What does that mean to you and me? It means that the Word of God is in the well of your consciousness, ready to give you living water, eternal life, the gift of God. Jacob's well is your consciousness. What comes out depends on whether Christ is sitting on the well or not, in your consciousness. If you're just going into the well like everybody does with a human mind and just doing what you think you want to do today, Christ isn't sitting on the well of your consciousness. And you're not being fed the living Word, the living water. This clarifies itself continuously. That unless, right now, the next moment, the moment after, the living Word is moving you, directing you, loving you, embracing you, teaching you, feeding you, you're walking in an ungodly universe, unfed, undirected, untaught, abandoned by your own unawareness of the Word, which is waiting for you to say, "Give me your water." And this woman of Samaria is passing the test now. She's being tested. This is her initiation. Little does she know it. The Christ is probing to find out one thing. Is she ready? And for all of us who love to go out proselyting, this scene at the well is very important. You might think, oh, there he is. He's just a strange woman, and before you know it, he's trying to bring her into truth. That's probably what I'm supposed to do. And so we all go out, and if somebody comes along the street and wants to fix your tire, before you know it, you're trying to teach him all about your way. Well, Jesus did it at the well. But remember, this isn't Jesus at the well. This is the Spirit of God. And you must let the Spirit of God do the proselyting, not the human mind. That's the difference. And when you go out trying to proselyte, and someone backs up and says, "Wait a minute now, I've got my religion, I don't want yours," you say, "Well, I've got the truth for you. Why can't you see it?" And that's why they can't see it. They're not yet ready. Even the Spirit of God yet hasn't told her anything. Not until she's ready. And there's a moment when you are aware that the other individual is ready. And then that's the equivalent of saying, "Tell me, tell me, tell me." All giving of the Word must be given only when you know. Not humanly. But Spirit somehow gives you the Word. This individual is begging you. Give it to them. But until they do, remember, this is my universe. Don't try to stuff the Word down somebody's throat. And so he's just preparing the way. If there comes a moment when she's ready, she's going to hear a major truth. And you can be sure she's ready, because that major truth is about to come. One of the greatest truths the world has ever known. Then saith the woman of Samaria, "How is it that thou, being a Jew, ask, drink of me. And then Jesus said, if thou knewest the gift of God, you would have asked, and I would have given you living water. Now she turns and she says, sir, thou hast nothing to draw with. The well is deep. From whence, then, hast thou living water? That's what happens when you are proselyting. The individual will take something you have in a lofty thought, brings it right down to a material level. You're talking about the water of heaven, and they say, you don't have a spoon or a bucket. How are you going to pick it up? And you've got to allow for that. If they don't have the faculty to receive, where are you going to pour your truth? Into their minds? They'll say, oh, I understand it. But they won't. And they'll go on thinking they understand it. And that's the problem. Thinking they understand it when they don't. And when it comes time to demonstrate it, they won't be able to. And they will feel that the word failed them. They'll say, why did God do this? They never knew God. They only understood some words you stuffed into their minds. So we're seeing the way to do it. And he hasn't yet opened up to her. Now she's going to taunt him. Who does this Jew think he is after all? Telling me he's got living water. And so she says, art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well and drank thereof himself and his children and his cattle? She thinks she's got him over a barrel. He's unconcerned, no animosity, no condemnation, still probing quietly. The Spirit knows that this woman is ready for the truth. The Spirit knows. Jesus answered and said unto her, whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. So now we have physical water used as a symbol. He's not speaking of just physical water. He's speaking of that impure truth, which the human mind thinks is truth. And that's why it thirsts again. It says, I understand. I understand this, and then goes out and makes an error. Why? Because the understanding is false, not practical, not based on reality. And so, after the error, we thirst again. That's the water of the five senses, the truth that we call truth. There are four types of water in this well scene. Just water. And then the impure water of the five senses. And then the opinions we form based on that impure water of the senses, meaning the truth of the senses, the false opinions we form about that truth, which is impure truth, and the way we live on those false conditioned opinions, that's the third kind of water, the physical water, the five sense testimony, which is the impure water, the opinions we form from that testimony, which is the impure action, and finally the living water of Christ, the Word itself, uncontaminated by human thought. She's been looking for that water. She doesn't know it. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. It's dependable. It's divine. It works. It gets the job done. It's not opinion. It's not 5 cents testimony. It's not belief. It's truth itself. It's the light made visible. It's the word of the Father expressing in human consciousness through that individual who permits himself to surrender that human consciousness, the living water. And that individual never thirsts again. For what? For mortality. For that individual has found the great gift of life, which is immortal. But the water that I shall give him, I, the truth that I shall give him, this is Christ in you speaking, appearing at a well. The truth that I, Christ in you, shall give you, shall be in him, shall be in you, a well of water springing up unto everlasting life. This is all strange to the woman. It shouldn't be to us. We've been standing at the same well for many years now. The well of infinite consciousness, the Christ sitting on the well, is the I in the midst of you, sitting on the well of your consciousness. Recognize Christ, and I will give you living water. You will never thirst again, and it shall become your life everlasting. Where else in the world is there a greater truth than the very Spirit of the Father saying to you, if you touch Christ within you, you will live forever? What more could we want? What more is there? And how foolish must we be when it's clear to us to turn away? Even the woman feels a stirring now, even though these are new words to her. So the woman says, Sir, give me this water, that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. She interprets it back to her material world. She won't have to come to the pump. It'll help her life, save time, be more comfortable. He's not ready to tell her much yet. She's not ready. She hasn't said the magic words. Something in her hasn't become alive yet. So he says, go call thy husband and come hither. That's quite a shock, an abrupt turning, her husband. Now, why would he say that? You need a faculty to receive this water. She couldn't just say, all right, pour it out. I'm ready. Here's my bucket. You need a faculty. He was talking about something different than the word husband in our human sense of things. Call thy husband. Call the faculty that can unite with the Christ. Call the faculty which can give us the holy marriage. We can't pour living water unless you are united with Source. Bring your higher consciousness, which is united with Source. I have no husband, sir, she says. She was so shocked, she admitted she had no husband. The admission was that the man she was with was not her husband. How did he know all this? What made him so smart? Oh, he's even smarter than that. When she said, I have no husband, he said, thou hast well said, I have no husband. For thou hast had five. Five husbands. And he whom thou hast now is not thy husband. In that saidest thou truly. Now she knows something is very strange. This man not only talks to a woman publicly, although he's a Jew, he not only offers her living water, he knows her past. Of course, a man wouldn't. Spirit. Functioning through Jesus as omniscience reveals that the woman has been relying on her five husbands, her five senses, for truth, and so she has no faculty to receive living water. She's in that impure water. The five sense testimony. She may have gone even up to metaphysics. Because the sixth fellow she lives with now, he's not her husband, but she's trying above those five senses. Now here we are, the human race at the well, and we are using our five husbands, our five senses. We're going to get physical water out of the well, and it's going to be impure. We might go to a higher level of the mind and think we're getting better water, but it's still going to be impure, because the sixth one, the higher level, still isn't the right husband. We're still not married with source. Why? Christ in you is the only way you can be married to source. Christ is the husband. You must be married to Christ. Without Christ as the husband, there is no mystical marriage. But Christ is beyond words and thoughts, beyond five senses, beyond metaphysics. Christ is the mystical consciousness. And now she's almost ready to tell him what he's been waiting to hear. The woman said, Sir, I perceive thou art a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Now you see, worship to her means a place. Just as it does to the world today. There's a place, there's a church there. That's where you worship. Or there's a mountain there, or a temple there. And to her it means our fathers worshipped in a place. They had this mountain, Mount Gerizim. And it's true, the Jews burned down the temple there, and the Samaritans retaliated. There was hostility on both sides, but our forefathers worshipped in that mountain over there, and your forefathers worshipped in Jerusalem. Please explain just what I'm to do. Jesus said unto her, Woman, believe me, the hour cometh when you shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. Now this should have been a sign to all of the religions of the world that worship of God is not in a place. In other words, this is the statement that external worship of God is impossible. You cannot worship God out there. or in a physical place. There's no such thing as a physical place in which to worship God. Not a mountain or a temple or a building or a church, nor an ashram, nor a Buddhist temple. It doesn't make any difference. You don't worship God in a place. You worship God within your own consciousness as you touch and accept Christ within. This is the statement of it. Ye worship, ye know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. Now he's just left the Jews. He's teaching one who is half Jew, half Gentile. But salvation is of the Jews. You see then, that Jew refers to the Israelite. The spiritual understanding in a man. Spiritual understanding in you is the Jew. Salvation comes of spiritual understanding. It's a symbol, as all things are in the Bible, symbols. Whoever comes to spiritual understanding is an Israelite. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. And so, we find two baptisms introduced by Jesus, one for truth, one for spirit.